Hi everyone, this is Zach Coble. I'm the chair of the Commission on Disability Issues. It is now 3:30 p.m. On October 15th, 2025, and I call the meeting to order. Brandy or Stephanie, can you take roll call, please?
Sounds good. I'll do it. All right. Sue Kroger?
Here.
Derek Espadas? Zach Coble?
Here.
Ray Jordan?
Here.
Lily Bogan?
Here.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Present.
Kate Elliott?
Here.
And Jonathan Lee Comfort.
I thought I saw Jonathan before we started.
Yeah, I did too.
Maybe he had to step away.
We do have quorum. Yes, we do have quorum.
Okay. Well, that's kind of the important thing. We should be good to go then. First is a call to the public. I don't know that I see any members of the public not affiliated with the city or CODI directly, but if there are folks on the call that would like to bring attention to any disability issues within the city of Tucson, now would be the time to do that. I'm going to pause for just a moment while we do that. Okay, not seeing or hearing anyone raise a disability issue. We'll move on to the next agenda item, which is consideration and possible approval of last month's meetings. Did commissioners have a chance to review those minutes? And if you did, did you have any changes, additions, edits that were of significance? If not, I would be looking for a motion to possibly approve those minutes.
I motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Kate. I would now be looking for a second.
I will second. Ray Jordan.
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate that. Brandy, would you take roll call, please?
Perfect. All right. Sue Kroger?
Yes.
Derek Espadas? Zach Coble?
I'm going to abstain.
Okay. And then Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Lily Bogan?
Yes.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
And Jonathan Lee Comfort?
Yes.
Perfect. All right. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 for yes, 1 abstaining, 0 for no.
Great. Thank you. Motion passes. Okay. Now on to our substantive agenda item one of them for the day. Sunvan update and discussion of operational analysis. I believe I see both Ian, Andy Bemis, and then, sir, I know you just took the position, but I have not heard your name pronounced. Can you, Tanya? I'm sorry.
Good afternoon. I'm Tanya Chewy, so Chewy. The new AGM at Sunvan.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chewy. I appreciate that. So, we just wanted to kind of have you on, both to, see what's been happening over the last several months, since the last time we talked about Sunvan, here, and then get an update on the, comprehensive operational analysis, which I believe, Ian Samsonson, sent to me today, and Stephanie or Brandy forwarded that on to the rest of the commission earlier this afternoon. So are there any highlights or things you'd like to introduce Mr. Chewy or Andy?
Sure. Zach, maybe I'll start if that's okay.
Sure.
And I'd love to, I'll just introduce myself to, I recognize some of the commissioners, but I haven't been here in a while. So if you haven't met me already, my name's Andy Bemis, and I'm a deputy director with the Department of Transportation and Mobility for the City of Tucson. And I'm over, among other areas, our Transit Services Division. So I'm here today. And yeah, we would love the opportunity to go over the summary results, which is what Ian shared with you earlier and what has been distributed to the members. The full report of the comprehensive analysis will be posted on our website. It's not quite there yet. We're doing this round of kind of final stakeholder meetings to go over those, and then we'll publish the full report. You can, you know, look it over in your when you have the opportunity and can provide more feedback. But today we wanted to just highlight some of the highlight it with the summary document. So if it's all right with you, I'll turn it over to Ian and he can kind of use that document. We'll screen share it for those if it's helpful, and hopefully you have it if you want to pull it up on your own end as well. And we can just kind of go through it piece by piece. What were the key findings? What were the recommendations that were split into short or mid and or near-term, mid-term, and long-term recommendations? I'd say many of those are sort of internal operational recommendations that we've already begun implementing to try and improve on-time performance and other metrics. Some of those are not yet implemented but plan to be. So I'll let Ian share screen and kind of go through that. And then, you know, for any kind of specific questions, and then, you know, Panya, I definitely want to make sure you have an opportunity as a, you know, not new to paratransit, but new to paratransit in Tucson to provide your feedback. You know, Panya came on at the tail end of this analysis, but I think, you know, immediately recognized some operational efficiencies and improvements we can make to provide a better service. So Panya, maybe when Ian's done or if at any point, feel free to raise your hand and chime in and add additional detail, please feel free. Same for commissioners, you know, you can raise your virtual hand or just speak up.
Thank you.
Andy. Yeah. So, take it away, Ian.
Hey, yeah. Thanks, Andy. Questions here. Make this a little bit larger. Can you all see my screen? Take that as a yes. So just pull up to the very top here. First of all, yeah, thanks, Andy, for the introduction. And thank you all, Zach, for having me here again. I think I was here towards the end of last year to give a very brief update. I think that was probably only 10 minutes on the Sunvan COA and kind of what we're doing and the plans and the schedule. So we're back, coming back around, and this will be kind of the final presentation. We're at the home stretch here. Some of you I know have been very involved throughout, and want to thank you for that and thank you for your patience, particularly Chris Desborough, Ray Jordan, Wesley. So some of you really appreciate all the time that you put in helping to get people involved and, you know, filling out surveys. And I know it's been a lot of work, so thank you. We've sent this memo out, and hopefully you've all received this. It's only a few pages. This is really just kind of a summary of the findings from the COA that we've been working on for the past. So we started the COA back in about May of last year, so a little more than a year. And we are just now kind of wrapping up the final recommendations, and so we're going to go through those. And so this is really just kind of the meat of the full document that Andy mentioned. So if you really want to dive in on some of the data from the peer review, from the data analysis, from our consultants on-site evaluation, all that stuff here that we completed as part of this COA, That will be available, as Andy said, by the end of the month online. So this, some of this stuff might be a refresher for some of you. Some of you have seen this many times. But just for, you know, overall background, some of the ridership trends. So SunVan, again, is our paratransit service for the city of Tucson. And it operates everywhere within the city limits. But the core service is, within, or the ADA required service is within 3/4 of a mile of every SunTran bus route, or a SunLink streetcar route, throughout the region. So when looking at the data for the system, TMD, who is our consultant, found that, you know, demand for SunVan did drop off, during COVID, but it has since returned, and is about as high as it has been ever. You can see about 2,200 riders. I think that's up slightly to about 2,300, 2,400, now. But very close to what it was, in 2019, just before the pandemic. Monthly boardings, has increased about 2%. We see, you know, a lot of the same places as top destinations for SunVan. Beacon, Foundation has been number one, for quite a while. And 33% of clients are new just since 2019. That seemed like a lot of turnover to us when we were first looking at this, but apparently that's pretty typical. So the major findings, existing SunVan clients, you know, gave us very high remarks in that first survey that we did last year for, cost, comfort, and safety, doing really well in those categories, but not meeting expectations, for on-time performance, and for ride scheduling and for some of the wait times, call hold times. And so I'll go through some of that and then some of our very specific recommendations that we're, as Andy mentioned, already working on implementing. So under service eligibility, we found that new applications have generally stayed about the same. We deny about 4% of our applicants, which is lower than the average that we looked at peer cities, you know, and across the country is about 10%. The medical verification form process we found was overly complicated compared to what a lot of other places are doing. It takes more time, and so we're working to simplify that. So when you first try and, you know, sign up and become eligible for SunVan, just trying to reduce the number of steps that you would have to go through and then also that our staff would have to go through to process that. We found that no-shows were almost 7% of all trips. So no-shows are, you know, basically when somebody calls for a SunVan ride, the SunVan goes to that location, but then nobody is there. So it's classified as a no-show and they, you know, they wait for a period of time. And nobody shows up and that gets classified as a no-show. So that's pretty high and we want to get that number down. We found call hold times, are longer than they should be for a lot of people. We want to get those to under 3 minutes, for, you know, the vast majority of calls. And they're taking a long time because of how trips are scheduled. And so there's just, you know, there's often the same staff previously have been working on, reservations, scheduling and dispatch. And so that can take a while. Also agencies may call and reserve a number of trips for a number of people all at once. And so that can, tie up the lines for a while as well. Trip negotiation, is often not used. So, you know, when you call in, you request a time at 3:30 p.m., which is during peak period. Previously, you know, we've tried to give people that time and said, yes, we'll show up at that time. But negotiating can really help with on-time performance and saying, no, we can't be there at 3:30, but maybe 3:05. Because we have a lot of people, you know, that are being dispatched at 3:15, 3:30 can really kind of help, to show up, closer to on time. And then we also need dedicated scheduling staff. So I mentioned on time performance. It's ideally, we would have 90, 91, 92% on time performance. And it has hovered around kind of 85 to 88%, but it's getting back up there, which is great. So we're going to, you know, we're going to see kind of how all these recommendations play out, over the next several months and how that goes up. On-time performance though is below 80%, during that peak period that I mentioned. So weekdays between 3 to 5 PM, that's when it really can take longer, to get a ride. And 15% of weekday trips are exceeding, what's the allowable onboard time. So we say, you know, we want to see no more than 5% of trips exceed the SunTran time on that same route plus 10%. Okay. The 5-minute callouts, to clients can take a lot of time for dispatchers. So we're working on ways to automate that. So the dispatchers can be focused more on taking calls for in dispatching. And then under premium service, so I mentioned, you know, we have, the ADA required service is everywhere, again, within 3/4 of a mile of a SunTran bus route or a SunLink streetcar route. Okay. So this premium service is for people that live or want a SunVan ride outside of this area, but still within the city of Tucson city limits. We do offer that. It's not, typically same day, although people can try and request that. And sometimes that is provided as well. So we know that those trips though, they take longer. They're typically longer distance than the required trips. We did find also through our surveys that, more than a third of existing SunVan clients do use Uber or Lyft or have in the previous month. And that's relevant because of the potential pilot program that I'll mention in a bit. So scrolling down here to the third page is our implementation plan. So this is 26 action items. Separated into short-term recommendations, medium-term recommendations, and long-term. So short-term are less than 6 months, medium-term 6 to 12 months, and then longer-term more than a year. And so under the short-term recommendations, we've listed the category that they fall under, the specific action item, the responsible party, so it's either city or SunVan. And then whether this is an internal recommendation or a client-facing recommendation. And so, you know, we're kind of getting in the weeds here today, but for the public outreach that we did a number of months back, it was in May, so earlier this year, we had a survey, and we only asked people about the client-facing recommendations back then. And so we got some feedback, but the internal ones we've kind of been, you know, working on. We've been presenting them as well at those outreach meetings, but we haven't really been asking for specific feedback. So some of those are really just things that we need to work on internally, and others impact people. And so we want to make sure that people have an opportunity to have a say, in what we do. The first one, diagnosing technology issues, that's kind of a running theme throughout, just making sure that everything works fast and efficiently. So Trapeze is our reservation system. Offer negotiated trip times, as I mentioned. So maybe you don't, you know, if you ask for a trip at 3:30, you may not necessarily get it. But we try to offer that, or it's required that we offer a time within an hour of the requested time. But it may be just a little bit outside that immediate window. Providing pickup windows to the minute instead of running every 5 minutes can improve overall efficiency over the course of a day. We've already been, you can see in the bold here too, we've already been implementing a lot of these short-term recommendations. So some of these went into effect over the summer. Some of them we're still working on. We have already implemented, trip negotiation steps, with our staff or with SunVan staff. Our SunVan has done trip negotiation training. We've also updated the pass web and the app so that you get trip negotiation there as well. And then SunVan is currently working on converting reservation staff, some reservation staff to router positions, because we've not previously had specific router positions. And then conducting software training for dispatchers on route monitoring was implemented. We are establishing on-time performance procedures. That's currently in progress. And then there's a few kind of procedural things that are internal, like this changing the onboard comparability standard so that, again, less than 5% of trips exceed the fixed route time plus 25 minutes. And then here at the bottom, this is a big one that we went out to the public and got a lot of feedback, and heard, a lot of strong, passionate, opinions. But this really would only follow the implementation. This last one, so this recommends narrowing the Sunvan optional service area, to before 7 a.m., between 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and then after 7 p.m. on weekdays, until on-time performance and onboard time standards. We would only implement this if, after first implementing all of the above recommendations, we're going to be monitoring the progress of the on-time performance and see if it goes up over the next 6 months. And we expect that it will, as it has already begun to rise. But if not, this could be, a recommendation that we end up looking at more closely. Under medium-term recommendations, so develop a process to track and enforce the no-show policy and update the no-show policy. That's currently in progress. We've had some recent conversations, might be looking at kind of releasing a new no-show policy by early next year. We have implemented a new phone tree, so if you call and have a specific item that you want to get to, there is a sub queue, so you can hit a specific number for reservations versus checking where your ride is. The second one here, it says limit calls to no more than 10 reservations per call to reduce call hold times. We have upped that to 10 reservations. In the previous iteration, when we went to the public, we said no more than 4 reservations per call to reduce call hold times. But we got a lot of feedback that was too few, and that some people really need to make a number of reservations over the next week or two, and so 10 we thought might be appropriate. We want to get more feedback on this one. Restore paratransit driver shifts to 2019 levels. That's something that, is listed as a midterm item, but it's really kind of ongoing. And that number fluctuates, but it's getting back up towards 180 total operators, which is where Sunvan needs to be for on-time performance. And then tracking performance data by service type, so really kind of comparing Sunvan and the city, and then outside the city in the county, ADA versus the premium service, so we can get a better handle on how each individual system is operating. And then kind of scrolling down, under long-term recommendations, you can see we've also started moving on a few of these. And that's because some of these just take a long period of time. So explore moving the eligibility process from currently it's within the city of Tucson Department of Transportation. So the plan is to move the eligibility process to within Sunvan. But again, that might take more than a year or two to actually implement. But we have started the initial steps. Simplify medical verification form and require applicants to provide that medical verification form with the rest of the application, kind of same thing. We're looking at how we can do that in a way that is not a burden on people who are applying and can also improve efficiency for the staff. And then some of these at the bottom here, maybe less priority, but still could have a really, big impact. So switching out right now, if you call to receive updates on your ride status, you'll talk to a person. The 5-minute call out, some people can request, you have the ability to request a 5-minute call out, and a number of people do. And so that also takes time from staff. And so automating those, can also, improve overall on time performance as well. And then the big one down here is consider offering alternative transportation pilot program, for Sunvan clients for same day trips. This is one, you know, we've really heard from, you know, a number of you on this call that this would be a good idea. And we have been looking into some example programs, like Valley Metro's Ride Choice Program. So they've had that in effect for a few years now. And it does offer, same day service, as well as, service, for all paratransit eligible clients kind of outside that required service area as well. So it's just, you know, a little more flexibility, another option. They work with, I believe it's like 13 different, rideshare companies, and, medical transport companies, to operate that system. And it is, you know, around the same price as their paratransit system. So they have fares. So it's, you know, $4 a ride for a paratransit trip, at Valley Metro, and it's $3, using their, ride choice program. So we're looking at this more closely and what makes sense for Tucson. It could be a regional system potentially here as well, but that's going to require more time to finalize that. And should that go through, that may present the opportunity to then sunset our current premium ADA trip service, which, again, is only available, occasionally. So, and then scrolling further down, we did post the latest survey results. So those items that I mentioned, that were public facing, we asked about and got feedback on a survey in the spring. Those results are posted here. Generally favorable for pretty much everything. The only ones, you know, where we saw higher numbers of people who disagreed with the recommendation are here at the bottom, and that's temporarily narrow the optional service to non-peak weekday times. You know, unsurprisingly, that would be, you know, removing some of our service, so that was less popular. And then piloting the Mobility Choices Program. We think that was less popular because we listed, fares of $12, which is pretty high, especially since our current system is fare free. And so we got a lot of comments as well in the survey that, you know, that's too high, but people would like to see something like this if it was less expensive. And then next steps, we're going to be sharing that final draft report. As I mentioned, will be posted publicly online at the end of the month. TTAC is the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee. I know Ray is here. He's a member. So we're going to present it there, likely November or December, have a conversation and then continue working on implementing the short-term and medium-term recommendations, and then refining that Mobility Choices Program. So that's all I have. Anybody? Looks like there's a question.
Ian, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Ian?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
Michael. I'm sorry, everybody. Before we get into the question and answer portion of it, I want to just piggyback off the end of what Ian was talking about, bring you up to date with some of the things I brought Panya on board that have been addressed. That kind of will give you some more insight. It incorporates a lot of the information that you saw, but really what we did is we cherry-picked the parts that related to you wanting better service, and we started instantly jumping on it. So I know that some of it says 6 months, some of it says longer. I want you to sort of hear real-time directly what we've been doing, which goes beyond some of the feedback that we've even gotten, because with Panya's experience, he's been doing this for quite some time. In my experience, probably together, we have, what, Panya, about 50 years of experience. So we sort of know how to take what your complaint was, what your complaints were, coupled with the information with the COA, and try to take it to the next level as quickly as possible. So I want to make sure Panya can kind of go over a couple of the things that have been done since his arrival and what we've done from an on-time performance standpoint. Because even though the COA gives advice, there are a lot of other things that can be done to be able to enhance what you're talking about. We did some of those things, so I want to make sure that we get that out. And then once we go over that, it may answer some of the questions that you may have about the COA itself. Panya?
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Ann, for the brief description of what's happening at our location. Thank you for your time. I just want to highlight a few things that we've been doing locally with the team since I came on board. The couple main things that we implemented, also training with our staff, is the phone tree. Phone tree is very important to reduce the amount of time that our consumer call in to wait to be picked up and answer the phone call, right? Phone tree coming into reservation, to dispatch, to ensure that when they call, they can speak to the right department. So before everything comes through the same channel and reservation, pick up the call for reservation and answer the ETA calls for the folks that's providing the service on the day of. So now when the phone people call in the phone tree, they segregate out to different departments where we can help them better and faster. That's been helping out a lot to ensure that they don't be on the phone too long. The second thing is the trip negotiation, like Ian mentioned, has been a great help for our consumer, because now we don't give them the time that they really need, like the 3 o'clock the most. We can use the ADA rule, the hour before and hour after, so we can give them those time based on what's available within those time frame. You know, if you request at 3 o'clock, we give you at 2 o'clock between 2 and 4, so give you more flexibilities on creating the schedule for the flow for drivers to pick up our consumers. So that's very important. And also, like Ian mentioned, we didn't switch the agent to be a schedule. We hired 2 additional agents called a schedule optimizer now, that they come in and look at the schedule that was created by the agent, polish the route, massage the trips to ensure that there's a better flow, that they don't zigzag around the city. So now when the driver pick up folks with a manifest, they are able to have a better flow of picking up, so the onboard time will be reduced. Instead of having many violations of the onboard time, now we have the flow of picking up our consumer, and they get to their destination quicker and better and more efficient. So the 2 new schedule has been on board for about a month and a half now. They've been doing a fabulous job and helping increase the efficiency on the routing, and that equate to better service for the public and for our user, and more happy with the driver wise, because they're out there, they don't have to go zigzag all over the area picking up our client there. So, and the first month that I was here in July, we hit our number at 90.14% with the value in the trip. So that's a very, very great month for us to push forward to provide the service for our City of Tucson folks. And we continue to improve as we speak. So we dipped down a little bit in the month of August and September, but not too far off of 90%. And this month we are looking at pretty solid at a 90.2% right now. So we're at 90.15 as of yesterday. So we continue to push that forward with also with the no-show policy, like Ian mentioned. I feel that we have not looked into the no-show policy to ensure that our folks are using the service the most. I mean, if they're not using the service, we need to ensure that we can take them off the subscription, so we can have more of a more room for other folks that can use the service. So we are looking into that. We almost finalized that. We look into early, maybe January 1st of implementation of the no-show policy. So I mean, we went through an intense review from our location and the city, and I think we are ready to push that forward. So, and also with that being said, training wise with Trapeze, I know Trapeze has been here for a very long time. We didn't really get into the meat and potato of training our folks on how to better manage the flow, meaning that dispatcher was not monitoring the trip as they need to, because they're not really in tune of how the flow works. And now we have dispatch manager on every station that they're able to look into the future to see what trip's going to be running late, so we can move those trip, not the trip that's running late as is, so we can work into the future so the trip can be on time as things progress. So everybody are getting the buy-in on the vision, and we push that forward and training the dispatcher and driver, educating on them on how things works. And then also the schedule, working with the supervisor and the agent to ensure that they understand what is actual trapeze, understanding the flows and having a better efficiency for our service. So we continue to learn, we continue to improve, and we continue to educate our team to make things happen for us. That's the main thing, is to understand the end result of what we're doing here. Sometimes we don't understand why we're doing here, what we're doing. So if we educate them on how to understand the reason behind paratransit is to provide the service to the folks that really need the service the most, then they will put ourselves in their shoes, understand it better, and we'll have some more empathy and sympathy to reduce the amount of onboard violation and ride time and get to the appointment on time. So that's important to myself and the team here. So, and to finish that off, we just kick off 50 new vehicles for our location, and that helps out with the cleaner buses, and our rider will be more happy, and also five new electric vans out there. So that helped with the emissions. So that's a great thing for our city of Tucson. Very excited about that. And I look forward to having better efficiency for our folks here in the city of Tucson.
Absolutely. And just to piggyback off of that, when I first met everybody here on this team's meeting, I was brand new and I made a whole bunch of promises. I said on-time performance is going to get better. I said we're going to get new vehicles. I said that customer service and respect is the most important thing for me. And I believe we're heading in the right direction. Just because we're at 90%, I'm not happy. I'm not happy until I get on and tell you're at 95% and I have no complaints. I don't know if that's going to happen and I don't need y'all's help. But I just wanted to just come on to let you know that I listened to you. We are performing as we promised, and we're going to keep on. So we're not just stopping here. We're going to incorporate the information from the COA. But as you can see, we know that there are some things that we can do, and hopefully you have noticed the difference in the service within the past few months. So with that, I'll stop talking. I know you guys are tired of hearing from me. And then you guys can go ahead and ask me whatever you want, or Panya.
Yeah. Thank you, Mikhail. Thank you, Panya. And thank you, Ian. I think, I see people's virtual hands lighting up. I think Lily Bogan had her hand up first, then Wesley, then Ray. And I'll have some questions, you know, as things clear out. But, yeah. So, Lily, if you have a question.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Zach. I want to thank you all for being here and making the improvements to ADA transportation. I noticed that there were two things that were not discussed. The first is the application process. Has there been any discussion of moving away from the inaccessible PDF form to a more accessible web form? I'm blind, by the way, so I actually cannot use that PDF form that's provided, and I need a sighted assistance every time I have to fill it out.
I think Ian or Andy would have to answer that one.
Yeah, Lily, that's the first that I've heard that feedback, but that's excellent feedback, and so taking notes here, and we can look at that process as well. As I mentioned, the eligibility office is within the city of Tucson, and so we are looking at the medical verification form and making that process easier. We can look at the format around that as well.
Thank you. My second question is the call center hours for reservationists. Has there been any discussion on making the hours a little bit wider period of time, like between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., like the Phoenix area has it?
Not that I know. Panya, I'll defer to you on.
That's a great question. I mean, we can discuss about that, but right now the time is from 7 to 4, Monday through Friday. Monday through Sunday, I mean. So, I mean, we can make a note of that and have discuss about that.
Yeah, let me jump in if you don't mind. See, one of the things we want to do is take exactly what we have and make it better and then expand it, right? So let me get this perfect And then we'll start trying to extend the time frame. I need to walk before I crawl. I don't want to make a promise that I can't keep. But we're going to write that down. And once we get everything to a point when I get on and everyone's happy, then we'll start looking at that expansion. And that's increased. That will require increased manpower or people power also.
Right. Yeah, that 4 o'clock gets me every time. It, I always miss that 4 o'clock cutoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Lily. Did you have any other questions? I just want to make sure before I move on to Wesley.
That's it for me. Yeah, you can move on.
Okay. Wesley, if you have questions.
I do. I have a series of questions. My first is a clarification. At the beginning of this presentation, you mentioned that Sunven covers the entire city of Tucson. Then later on, you said it covers within 3/4 of a mile of where the bus routes is. Can you tell me which it is?
Yeah. Hi, Wesley. So there is a required service, which is by ADA, by ADA law.
I'm aware of that law, but I want to know what Sunven is. Is it within city limits that Sunven's doing, or is it just within 3/4 of a mile of the routes? What is Sunven's policy? What are you doing?
So Sunven has two areas. There's the required area, and then there's the optional service area. So the overall service area is everywhere within the city of Tucson. However, rides and reservations within that 3/4 service area are prioritized. So if you are outside of that area but still within the city of Tucson, you may be able to get a ride, but you may not. So does that make sense?
I understand that much better now. It's very clearly explained. I do appreciate that. Now, when I find an address, like an address I'm going to soon, that is within 3/4 of a mile of the bus route, but yet I'm told that it's not within the limits, it kind of is shocking to me. And I want to understand how the determination of the 3/4 of a mile is ascertained by the system. How's it done? Is it done by the birds, how the bird flies, or is it done by how the Sunven driver would drive?
Ian, I'll step in on that one, and then, you know, so the service area is 3/4 of a mile on either side of a fixed route. So anywhere there's a SunTran route, so mm-hmm. It doesn't have to do with the routing of the Sunven route.
That's what I would think.
It's to make sure the origin and the destination mm-hmm. of the trip are within a 3/4 mile of a fixed route on the SunTran system, which is most of the center of the city. If you're outside that, which is predominantly like far southeast or, you know, a little bit northeast, where you're more than 3/4 of a mile from a fixed route, I should say the origin of the destination of the trip is more than 3/4 of a mile from a fixed route. That's how they're ascertained.
Okay. So it does the mapping based on how the crow flies from where the route of the bus goes. That's what I wanted to clarify. And, and I want to thank whoever it was who helped step up and solve the problem for one of my members in my, Arizona Council of the Blind group and got that squared away, because she is within 3/4 of a mile of the flying distance from Houghton Park and Ride bus terminal. But she was denied. She was put into the optional area. She is, you know, now not in that optional area because of that. So I really needed to understand that difference. Okay.
Yep. Sounds like that might have just been a mistake. I'm glad we were able to clear it up.
Yeah. And Wesley, I do want to emphasize that that 3/4 of a mile buffer from fixed route transit that Andy mentioned, that covers a huge majority of the city of Tucson city limits. I mean, it's probably 95%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are bus routes that go pretty much everywhere, and that is a pretty wide service area.
Correct. I wanted to ask about this, what do you guys call it? The ride negotiation thing. And I want to put it in the perspective of how would you feel? Let's say I'm going somewhere and I'm asking to get there by 4 o'clock and such. And the ride negotiator tells me that now my ride is going to pick me up instead of what the typical ride length would be, let's say to that place would be an hour and 20 minutes on the bus, let's say, right? If I was able to take the bus to that location, they're now saying, oh, it would be an additional hour because you have this wiggle room that you're talking about, but that would get me there almost an hour early. How would you feel if in your life you were told that a lot of the times that now you have to spend an extra hour sitting somewhere? What an inconvenience for someone who was already disabled and doesn't have a lot of, you know, just we've been slapped down very hard. How would you feel if that was told to you all the time? I don't like the ride negotiation thing is what I'm trying to say. It feels very unfair and unjustified. I understand the reason, but I don't, it doesn't feel right. So I'd like a response on that also. Like, how would you feel if you were told that you had to sit and wait for an extra hour at the other end because it got you there an hour early? And that's happened to me. I've arrived early in a place, super early. I've arrived before a restaurant opened, and I sat in the sun out in the heat. You know, and that's really unfair. I did have one other thing, and I'm going to have to reframe my mind about that, about what it was. But I do have one other thing. I'll come back to it later. I'll let Zach go on to Ray. Thank you.
Okay. Ray, you're up. And then I think Derek's on deck, if I saw the hand raise correctly.
Well, thank you, Zach. And when during the presentation, there were two things. I've got two questions. The first one, and both refer to the presentation, the no-show policy. I'm interested in that. And you're looking at updating that. Did I get that correctly?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Would the Cody be able to get a look at that to see what it looks like now and what you're thinking about updating that? Because obviously it sounds like a great idea to update it if it's not really working that well. Having perhaps the same people no showing for rides is probably not a good thing. It's screwing up the system for other people. So I get that, but it'd be very interesting to actually have a look at that policy if you wouldn't mind at some point in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely, Ray. Yep. Yes, we can share
that. Thank you. My second and final question, and I know I've kind of asked this before, but I'm still a little confused about you. Do I understand, and this refers to page 3, I think, of your presentation, the references to premium service and optional service. Are they the same thing? And this, it's kind of attaches to Wesley's questions.
Yes. They are the same thing. And I know that's confusing and I apologize. So the term that the city has been using is optional service. We didn't feel like that is a term that made a lot of sense, and TMD suggested that we change the name of it to premium service, as that's kind of more accurate in terms of what it is. It's not optional. It's kind of a premium service. So we've been using both, and we've been using them interchangeably, and I probably should have been clarified each time that they are the same thing.
It's my view, and thanks for that, is that neither of those terms are particularly descriptive of that particular service. So at the risk of confusing things even more, and I don't have a good suggestion except that, can you create a new name that actually describes that service accurately and stop using the other two, or stop using one of them or something? because if it's an optional service, it's, as Wesley described, or as you described before, it's not the rider that's making the option. It's some, if what you said before, if I heard it correctly, is that if somebody wants a ride that's outside of 3/4 of a mile of a SunTran route, then it's not the rider that's making the option. It's the dispatcher saying, I'm sorry, we don't have anything available. So therefore that's optional for SunVan. And that certainly would not represent a premium service if you either get it or you don't, you know, 50-50 pot luck.
Yeah. And I'll just want to say, I think you're absolutely right, Ray. Neither of those terms as we acknowledge don't represent the service well. Premium, certainly it's not, right? Optional it is, but it's not clear whose option, right? So I think we all hopefully understand on the call now, it's the area that is not required by the FTA to provide paratransit service, but for which the city attempts to provide it as we're able, right? And so there's got to be a better term out there, and we should, I accept your challenge to scratch our heads and think better about how to refer to this service area. Because, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's an area we are going to endeavor to provide service, but that is not required by the FTA for us to provide paratransit service. So that's what it is meant to refer to.
Okay. So we're on this subject. So I'm gonna pretend that I'm asking the same question, or it's a continuation of the same question.
Sure.
A rider calls to make a reservation for a place that is outside 3/4 of a mile of a SunTran route, and they may or may not be aware that their destination is outside, or the opposite. They would probably know if their origin point, their home, is outside of 3/4 of a mile. So we'll leave that one aside. But let's say they're not really aware that their destination is outside of 3/4 of a mile. So they call up SunVan reservations and they make a reservation. And what happens there is, as I understand it, based on the conversations today, is that the reservationist may say, I'm sorry, we don't have anything available because it's outside of 3/4 of a mile. Or if it's a quiet day, they'll say, yeah, no problem. Again, I guess I used the word potluck. I don't know, there's something not sitting right with me on that. How do we get around that?
Tanya, maybe if you can help a little bit. I think you're a little closer to the operation and knowing how, call taker and scheduler would handle that situation. I think my guess is you've described it pretty accurately, Ray, which is that if there's capacity, the trip will be scheduled. I'm not sure what it looks like if it's peak time and there's not. But Tanya, can you maybe shed some light on how that happens?
Sure thing. Thanks, Ray, for the question. I mean, yes, you hit the nail on the head based on when our client call and ask for the service. Sometimes the capacity, certain time frame, if you call to request a trip around 1 to 4 p.m., that's a very high peak time. We do our best to try to get this anything available, and we encourage our passengers to give us at least 7 days in advance to call if they're outside of the service area within 3/4 of a mile. So the more time that they give us, the better chance of us finding a solution for them. So usually we do get a call that a couple of days before the appointment time or the day of, and you know, when the capacity hit the max, we tend to give them the answer if we do not have anything available at the moment. Call back again to see if we can find something. So, I mean, I sit in dispatch almost every day. I do hear that we get a phone call and our dispatcher tell them, right now there's nothing available. Can you try back in the next 30 to 45 minutes? And I'll keep on trying to look to see if there's anything available. So,
okay, final point on this question. So then we can move on. Is that are Do you think the riders are aware of this? And I'll say that I've been an occasional Sun Ban rider for, I don't know, I'm thinking 10 years. And until the COA came out, I did not even know that this premium/optional service was even available. So I'm wondering whether I'm just the outlier or whether most people actually know this exists and that their ride request may not be able to be fulfilled, outside the service area.
Ian, do you know if that information is provided on their eligibility determination?
Yes, I believe that information is provided at that time. I will, also say that information can be found on the website through our flyers and so through some of the advertising materials. But I don't know how broadly that is known among people who, maybe have ridden Sunvan for a long period of time. I know I saw Stephanie is on this call, and maybe, you've got more knowledge of, and if there are a number of people who didn't realize this existed.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Zach, you're muted.
Yeah, sorry about that. Derek and then Wesley, we'll see how much time we have. We're kind of running up against time, and I want to give Derek a chance to ask his question, and then I may just have one other quick question to ask as well.
I have three questions.
Sure, Derek. Go ahead.
Two of them are data related. So one, is there a collection of data for the no-show? Like, are you collecting data on like the reasons people aren't showing up?
We do collect data. I mean, as we no-show our passenger trapeze, capture the reason why sometimes we show up and no one is there, and we notate that in trapeze, ensure that drivers show up and not transport as a no-show. Sometimes we don't get a call to let us know, and we notate that also, and we do have track records from trapeze to pull up Panya Chui to been no show for the last couple weeks. We do have that information available.
Awesome. Thank you. My next question is, I know there's a quest to maintain a high, rating and of satisfaction, but there's also a lot of implementation for operational reasons, and I think they're justified. Do you think that that's going to just create like a circular logic that you're just going to be continuing chasing your tail as you try to meet this satisfaction metric, but impose restrictions that, again, for justifiable reasons, but people in the service might not see that. And so then it keeps lowering your satisfaction, and then you keep trying to raise your satisfaction. How do you see that process working out?
Yeah, Derek, are you specifically referring to like potentially limiting the hours of the optional service versus what in particular do you think will?
There was a couple of, and I can't think of exactly, but just putting in like new policies about like the no show and just the way the interactions with it, they seem justified. And I agree from an operational standpoint. Yes, because you need to just make things more efficient. But I don't think users will be like, oh, what great operational efficiency. Mm-hmm. And that'll lower the satisfaction.
Right. Well, there are potentially new policies, as you mentioned, the no-show policy. But what we heard in the first survey, and I think we generally hear, is that on-time performance is most important, and that efficiency, and that's what we're really trying to get to. And so I think if rides are showing up on time, if it's an easy system to book a trip, and you're able to have that flexibility in when you want to book a trip and where, then the satisfaction will go up.
Okay, that's fair. And just lastly, this is just my perspective. I'm still driving. But as I get to a physical point where I can't do it as much, I am not looking forward to using Suntran. And one of the reasons is just the way it's set up. Commissioner Bogan mentioned earlier about the PDF form. That's a difficult item to navigate, but also just having to call in. We're in the age of Uber and Lyft, and it's one of those things I remember of not wanting to do with taxis. Like, is there going to be a technological move where it can be more digitally oriented for those of us who have a social human interaction aversion, whether from our disability or just humans in general?
Well, there is an app, right? And Panya maybe can fill in on, maybe updates are coming. So, but yeah, there is an ability to reserve rides without calling in as well.
Yes. Quickly, since there is an app that we're using right now, but we are hopefully revising with a robust update in November, so there'll be more revised version to come, so we are able to share that. So,
thank you.
Okay, Wesley, I see your hand up, but I do have a couple clarifying questions I wanted to get to, if you don't mind. One is, if with the no-show the percentage of no-shows being higher, do we know if there's like correlation between like any of that and the like overextensive social service agency, you know, scheduling so many rides in a row, like for participants in the social service agency, but like if that person's not wholly responsible for the ride, does that create issues with compliance or showing to a ride, I guess?
Yeah, well, so actually TMD has outlined a number of potential reasons for why the no-show rate is higher, and that will be in the full report, and I can send those around as well. I think a lot of it's just kind of assumptions. It could partly be due to the fare free policy that we have, and so people are looking at other options as well and just saying, hey, this could be like a secondary option, and then just not showing up. But it could be related to on-time performance. It could be related to a number of things. So,
right. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know, if there was and then with, there is a line item, like establishing on-time procedures in the, I think it's like it's either the short-term or mid-term goals. I wasn't sure what on-time procedures meant for operators and field supervisors and that type of thing. That was kind of like, what does that mean? So
I can take that in.
Yeah.
Basically, the on-time procedure and it's more of educational for our drivers and our supervisors to ensure that we can understand the flow of the scheduling aspect of it behind the scene. This is one reason why we have two new schedulers to arrange the trip the night before to make sure that we have a pretty good on-time performance before the actual morning of. So getting everybody hands on deck based on being available to support and assist as needed for the ops supervisor folks and the drive to understand, mainly to understand that the end result of every trip that we pick up is to ensure that we have an efficiency and stay safe. So getting the buy-in on our team to understand that flow is important. And now we're dripping the message on the numbers of understanding and all that. So.
Okay. So it's more like internal kind of planning to center the idea, like the need to create on-time performance, and meet or exceed those metrics. Okay. And then one final question. Is it possible that if on-time performance continues to trend up, and that no-shows go down because of a new policy, thereby, you know, decreasing the kind of inefficiencies that, like, the optional, like, implementing, like a restriction on the, I'm going to call it the extended distance area, because I don't know, like, you know, I don't know if that'll work, but, if that could be, not done, if those other metrics, you know, get better, because you'd be creating efficiency yeah. elsewhere. So.
Yeah, Zach, that is exactly the intent, is yeah. to try these other short-term recommendations first and measure progress over the next 6 months. And that is sort of a last resort, is to cut service, you know, and to that optional premium service area. We'll have to look at a new name, but okay. Yes.
Okay. Wesley, I want to recognize you, but if we could keep it to like 2 minutes, because we do have optional, or we have other agenda items, and I want to respect
it. It's fine. Mine is very fast. I just want to say I do actually support the no-show policy, and all I have a thought is I'm hoping that maybe if it doesn't actually get implemented, that it goes on like a rolling basis. In other words, you have the points against you, and then after 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 months, whatever, they start to go away in time. And if you build up more than they increase, then of course, if you hit that wall, that limit, that big number that you have to say enough is enough, then you enough is enough, right? That's all I have to say about that. But, you know, because obviously a person who's egregious in no shows is a problem in the system. And then the only other thing I just wanted to comment on is we have in the past commented about the PDF and the inability for the blind community to access the eligibility forms. This has been an ongoing discussion for a couple of years. It's been ongoing. But the good news is we all know that ADA compliance for website accessibility on all the forms, that's a hard end on April, I don't know the date, of 2026. So it will have to get implemented no matter what. Thanks. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Wesley. Andy, I see, has his hand up.
Zach, do we have 30 seconds for me to respond?
Yes, for sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that, Wesley, that is absolutely the intention on the no-show policy. That's what the plan is that it's sort of like, graduated sanctions, if you will. So first few instances are warnings. Next few instances are, you know, short-term temporary suspension of service, and going up to, you know, revoking your privileges entirely. Cause that, you know, of course we don't want to, life happens, right? Things come up. So we don't want to be overly punitive. My mind just went blank. What was the second part? Oh yeah, the screen reader,
PDF.
Or visually, PDF form inaccessibility for visually impaired. We are absolutely looking into this right now. I'm sorry. This is the first I'm becoming aware of it, although I'm newly over transit in my role as deputy director. So, I'm promising to you right now that we're going to be following up on that much sooner than the, 2026 deadline for all materials. I'm very discouraged to learn that today, that our eligibility process is not accessible for visually impaired people. So we will be following up on that. I hope we'll have a report at least on some next steps by next meeting of this commission. And you know, Lily or others, if you're open to it, you know, maybe we might contact you offline to run it by you, see if what we're planning will work for you, so we make sure we get something that's going to work for everybody. If you're willing to be a guinea pig in that regard, we'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Just to clarify, if Wesley or anyone on Lily or anyone on the commission, if you want to be in contact with Andy, Ian, Panya, or Mikkel, please email me, and then I will do the connecting, just so we don't get into weird open meeting interesting things. happy, and thank you all. Thank you all so much for your presentations and sticking with us and answering questions. We really appreciate your time. And, you know, look forward to seeing how this goes, you know, going forward. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. So next is, an agenda item that's just, I wanted to follow up, with the last meeting on, the road construction and accessibility discussion from last month, that kind of happened, as a commission that I was, absent for. I did listen to, pretty much the whole meeting. Thank you, Stephanie and, Brandy for getting that posted. That was very helpful in, creating this agenda. I wanted to let the commissioners know that I have reached out to Jen Toothaker about, an item for next month regarding road construction and creating accessible routes during road construction. And she was hopeful to get, I believe Rob was the person's name, that's the project manager for the Grant Road, road construction, here next month. I'm wondering if there's any other, if commissioners had any other, things connected, to the idea of road construction, or, to the reality of road construction and creating accessible routes, that, questions, things that would want to address, Derek and then Ray. Derek, I think you might be on mute.
I think you are correct. So, again, to the universality of it all, I was actually speaking with one of our state senators that happens to live just off Grant. And not only is it posing accessibility issues for the disabled, but for the able body as well. They have almost had to restructure their whole life to accommodate accessibility for their children. And accessibility for themselves. There's just absolutely no accessibility. And it's very strange because I was observing, where the buses are having to stop on Grant, people are being dropped off and there's no safe place for them to continue on anywhere, especially with all the heavy machinery and the unstable land as it's being developed. And so it's just, it seems to be a problem for everyone across the board of abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we know, oftentimes disability access also means increased access for all sorts of people. And lack of disability access also means lack of access for all sorts of people. Ray?
Thank you. Yeah, I forgot to mention when we were okaying the minutes that it was actually Derek who kicked off that conversation in the first place by letting us know that he'd actually had a fall from the wheelchair in an area, I think it was Grant Road itself, in that construction area that started that whole conversation. So I feel a memo to mayor and council coming on that, I think I saw some commentary about, I'm from the last meeting that, the necessary, alternate paths are provided in the downtown area where there's construction, but moving outside the downtown area, it's like every person for themselves. So, yeah, I feel a memo coming on, perhaps after our next meeting's discussion.
That was going to be part of my addressing in the next next agenda item. And I think, just briefly with some of the communication I've had with Jen is like having kind of a status discussion of where things are right now. And then, internally, if DTM creates like kind of policy guidance and training for construction companies to create, accessible paths, like as they're implementing that policy, coming back into CODI to, give feedback or things. I'll follow up with her as well. Derek and then Wesley. And then we probably ought to just kind of wrap up the agenda item and move on quickly to the next. So
one of the things I do want to bring up with the alternative pathways, and I get it for the people making these pathways, they don't have experience, but like I was just in Mesa yesterday and I was amazed. One of the difficulties in a manual wheelchair is coming to just when there's a driveway of some sort and the awkward angle and having to both push forward and up to keep from rolling into the street. Their driveways up there were almost like two separate sections. So there's a flat, straight sidewalk and then the inclined part for vehicles to go in and out. And so I just strongly want to recommend, like we often do, that there's some input on this because an alternative pathway may still be inaccessible if it's very cleverly designed, but just not really keeping in mind things that we have to deal with angles and textures and all the fun stuff that we find every day to navigate.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Thank you for that feedback, Derek. Wesley, and then we're going to move on to our last question.
I just want to quickly understand, Zach, is this just for the construction side, or is this going to be also for the completion of the project and getting it right for like how the bubble things are put down on the street corners and also how the signaling is installed, et cetera?
So really, I think what we're talking about in terms of this specific agenda item is because this is going to be like the accessibility of navigating like a street during construction is going to be an ongoing issue because there are many construction projects all over the city, which is great. Like increased, better roads and better sidewalks. But because this is going to be an ongoing issue, I was thinking that we would address, we can address the shortcomings or what's happening with, grant road accessibility during construction. But the idea would be that how the city is going to ensure that access is still happening to the best, to the most extent possible during construction, during road construction itself. Okay, and then, if we want to have a future, agenda item on specifically on Grant Road, we can touch base at that time.
Or completion of projects and how that's managed.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So, that's what I need to understand. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all. Okay. So I want to just move on to the last substantive agenda item. So in terms of, feeling a memo, feeling memos coming on, Ray, I was thinking that based on kind of like our conversations with Sunvan, maybe we could work on a memo regarding Sunvan like over the next month. And then after a conversation with Jen and or, the construction agenda item next month, we might as a body make a memo regarding access during construction after the November meeting. Does that make sense to everyone? Andy, I see your hand up. Sorry, I just saw it. So go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to share on Derek's point on the last item briefly about the sidewalks and the one you experienced in Mesa as it relates to driveways that we did. We updated our street design guide 2 years ago, and it's standard practice now on our new projects that where a sidewalk intersects a driveway, it is meant to be designed so that the sidewalk maintains its level and straight route, and that the driveway ramps up and over the sidewalk. I'll say that's the standard design criteria for the city of Tucson now. There are times where that does require space because the sidewalk can't do that if there isn't a landscape zone or a buffer zone between the road and the sidewalk to ramp the car up. So there are times where if that space isn't available on the project, the sidewalk will go down, but it obviously should not have. We know it exists all over the city because we've inherited this infrastructure that was built before, you know, these good design standards where there's actually a slope on the sidewalk at the driveway also. So that shouldn't be happening on new project designs going forward. And we've codified that in our street design guide. So just wanted to share that note. So hopefully we'll be seeing more instances like what you experienced in Mesa moving forward.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate that clarification.
I just wanted to add that I in no way want to say anything nice about Mesa.
I have no comments on Mesa as a municipality in one way or another. So, sorry, as I was trying to clarify, maybe we could write a memo regarding, you know, what we heard from Sunvan today for next month and then move on to a memo regarding the like construction and accessibility after next month's meeting after we've had a, you know, fuller time to discuss, you know, what's going on with that, and get a little more info. Does that sound like a good plan to the commission as such?
Oh. This is Ray. I think this is my view that perhaps we should do that in the opposite order. I think we've had a pretty full discussion on the construction zones and so forth. And I think the concept of making, having, you know, writing something into constructor contractors, contracts. Yeah. And guidelines and so forth. I think it's pretty straightforward. It doesn't have to be terribly detailed. You mentioned the ADA a few times in there and it's like, you know, safety and blah, blah, blah. I think creating a memo that gets the point across is not going to be very difficult. I think the Sunvan COA will take a little bit more time because we've not seen the final report yet.
Okay. I'm happy to, you know, switch things up. I just, I know, writing two memorandums or two memos in like a course of a month is, you know, a good bit of work. So I was trying to piece it out. You know, I'm happy, you know, if we want to write the memo on the construction, and access first. Ray, is that something you feel like you can kind of help volunteer to draft?
I will be a part of that if that's okay.
Great. Anyone else want to volunteer, for that piece? I'm happy to volunteer, but you know, if anyone has a passion, for construction and accessibility, I don't want to take away that opportunity. Okay. Seeing none, you know, I'll go ahead and volunteer. So we'll get that, Ray and I will get that together, a draft of that together for our next month meeting. We're running short on time, folks. We have about 5 minutes remaining. So if anyone has any very short announcements, now would be the time. Ray, I see your hand up.
Okay.
And maybe we can keep it to a minute. Just
okay. I'll see how fast I can go. I just discovered that Tucson Meet Yourself is this weekend. So hopefully maybe we'll see some of you there. I don't know what day I'll go, but I do intend to go. Secondly, the mayor has announced Safe City Initiative, which stems out of, sorry, this is going to take a little bit longer than I wanted to, but I attended the council, mayor and council's study session last week, where one of the major topics was transit safety. It was also a major topic for the Transit Advisory Committee. The discussion between mayor and council, the director of Department of Transport and Mobility and the police chief was a very, very good one. And obviously this initiative called Safe City has come from that within just a few days. So they're basically DTM and the police department are working on a plan to increase the safety, and really, to my mind, it's not just about transit. Most of the issue, the safety issues that sort of have been called transit safety issues, are really, in my view, just simply public safety issues. Although many of them happen at bus stops and bus transit centres, most of the incidents and things that happen do not involve people who are there to ride transit. They are there because they're doing drugs, because it's a roof, because it's got seats. It's really transit's kind of like a peripheral thing. But anyway, it gets thrown into that basket, and you'll see it on the news, public transit, blah, 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 safety. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so that's important. It's happening. The mayor and the vice mayor have directed, apart from some of the other agencies, the Transit Advisory Committee to be involved in the formation of this, policy, initiative. So that's really good, which means that I'm a little bit in the middle of that as well. So if anybody's got some feedback on safety, please send it to Zach, the chair, who will then give that information to me so that I will go into the next Transit Advisory Committee armed with that information. My one other thing I want to say is, and while we've got some, at least some, some Department of Transit and Mobility issue, department people here, rider training. I've seen announcements in email for, SunTran rider training, where people who are new to SunTran who'd like to ride the bus, they can sign up for a training session. And the thing is, they have to go to the North SunTran depot, which is basically a fortress, very difficult to get in, particularly if you take the recommendation to ride the bus there. My suggestion, I've made this to a couple of people, and I've got a few new people that I haven't made this recommendation to personally. Please take, this is a great idea, but take it out on the road. Do it at transit centers. Do it at places where people are. Do not lock it away in a facility where there's safety protocols to get in. There are barriers to entry. Thank you. I'm all done.
Yes. One other announcement, if anyone has anything, otherwise I will do an announcement real quick. Tucson Disability Pride Day is coming up on December 6th. this year, and if disabled artists that want to show their work, or disabled performers, on the call, or in your life, please let me know. And oh, I think I got myself muted. So, Tucson Disability Pride Day happening on December 6th. If you're an artist or a performer, or you know a disabled artist or performer that would like to show their work or perform, please reach out to me. Thanks, everyone. I'm going to log off. We're going to end the meeting now. So thank you.
Thank you, everybody.